You are listening to Radio Maria Canada, a Catholic voice wherever you are. We now present Ask the Lawyer, hosted by Joe Martinello.
Thanks, Nick. Thank you so much for the broadcast today. We're here in the Radio Maria studios. Apology, we started about 15 minutes late, unfortunately, because of traffic, and I had another client meeting this morning. So we're a little bit late in starting the broadcast today, which, of course, is going to concern citizenship, Canadian citizenship and immigration law. This program to speak to the lawyer is on the last Saturday of every month, and here we are to continue on. For those of you who maybe are listening to us for the first time, it's only been 1 month since we began the English language broadcast, and we're concentrating right for the moment on immigration and citizenship law. Those of you who are comfortable in the Italian language will know that there is the same program available on a more expanded theme basis on the first and third Saturdays of the month in Italian, which I also host. And the first Saturday of the month, if there are those of you who would like to listen in Italian, is and have the ability to do so, is done also on citizenship and immigration, whereas on the third Saturday of the month, we have various themes, usually in the relationship of real estate and business matters and wills, powers of attorney, and estate planning, although we are hoping to expand the to family law in the future. But for the time being, this is where we're at. And because the English language broadcast is a new one and with the new studio and the new equipment, we are, in a sense, going back to how we originally began in the Italian language broadcasting, and that is to deal with citizenship and immigration. If there are people who have questions that they would like to call or comments that they would like to make on the theme of Canadian citizenship and immigration, we are always very open and receptive to any comments or questions people may have. And so the phone number to call in to the studio is area code 416. The phone number is 245-1534. And I will repeat, 416-245-1534. So your involvement is always very much appreciated. So before we move into the actual theme of Canadian citizenship and immigration, which we've been doing in the Italian language broadcast for, I think, over a year and a half, it seems like these are all the hot-button items. We did want to point out that there's going to be a marathon for the program host announcements. And just before we get started with today's program, we'd like to take this opportunity to inform you of a worldwide marathon taking place from May 23 to May 27th this year. And this marathon is to help raise funds in order to establish other Radio Maria stations around the world, so we're able to bring the good news of Jesus through Mary to all the corners of the world. So during the week of May 23 to May 27th, volunteers will be available from 9 a.m. to 5 p.m. to take your pledges. So please help us bring Our Lady bring Jesus to the world as we call it, the voice of Catholic radio here in Canada. And your involvement and your support would be much appreciated because, as you know, Radio Maria operates purely on the basis of charitable deductions to maintain all the programs of a religious and maybe even, strictly speaking, a non-religious manner that we hope you find acceptable. And, of course, the expansion of the programming into digital media, which is so important for everyone going forward in an area of communications. So that being said, we're going to move now directly to the theme relating to today, which is Canadian immigration and citizenship. And last month, I had pointed out in some detail the basics of Canadian immigration and citizenship law, in particular the immigration matter. And I just want to repeat them because a lot of people are, although I understand from Nick that, in fact, maybe perhaps some of the programs have been rebroadcast at various times, because obviously everybody's listening abilities is restricted. We're broadcasting live on Saturday morning, usually at 11 o'clock in English, a little bit late this morning, for which we apologize. But we understand that also they're rebroadcasting during the week or during the month, so that there will be other opportunities for you to listen to the programming. I don't know the scheduling or if it's a haphazard thing. But anyways, it's important that if any of you want to listen or you miss a segment, that you are aware that there will be rebroadcasting abilities. So with respect to this program, last month, what we had discussed, which was really a primer, a beginning to understand what is Canadian immigration and citizenship law, just to give a very brief synthesis in case some of you were not aware of it. Immigration is a matter of joint responsibility between the federal and the provincial governments in Canada. They are the Canadian Constitution, Charter and Bill of Rights, preserves what has been the law in Canada basically since 1867. So we're talking this year in Canada, the 150th anniversary of our great country. And immigration is a joint responsibility. People oftentimes think it just belongs to the federal government, but this is completely inaccurate. Traditionally, Quebec was always the province that was more in the forefront of immigration, obviously because of the Francophone presence in Canada and the requirement to try to meet its own particular needs. But today, every single province and territory in Canada has their own set of immigration laws, one could say, that are merged together with the agreement of the federal government to meet their particular needs. So as I mentioned before, Quebec, the linguistic aspect of Quebec is important. Other provinces, for example, like Prince Edward Island, are still a much more agriculturally based economy, and they have particular needs that are very different than those needs, for example, and those of us who are here in Ontario, which is more of an economy based on technology and services. And similarly, in countries like Alberta, in provinces like Alberta, where still the petrochemical industries are of great importance, and in, for example, Saskatchewan, agricultural sectors are so very important to the economy, there's a different set of criteria. We are all one country, but the economic priorities can really vary from place to place and urban to rural. So the law, interestingly, over 150 years ago, has allowed this to occur. And so our legal system today, in fact, represents what is set out in the Constitution, that we have this federal-provincial mix. Then the other thing that one has to understand, and I want to talk a bit about this today in relationship to the demographics of Canada, is that Canada is a country of over 36 million people. That objectively speaking, demographically speaking, and it's been a policy for a very long time, irrespective of politics, it's a country that will grow to a minimum of 50 to 60 million people. So because of the low birth rate in Canada, as it exists in most other developed countries in the world, I think it's currently around 1.7 children per woman, and the magic number demographically is 2.2, in order to maintain populations, immigration is very, very important. So important that if you're going to move between people who are alive, people who are dying off, and immigration, we probably need about 1% of the population growth every year in order to maintain that growth to move towards 50 or 60 million people, which in demographically speaking gives us a country of some substance, and we're able to provide services largely through urban centers, but even through rural centers, rural lifestyles, that is much more objectively manageable and correct. Of course, we know Canada is a huge country directly to the south of us, United States, which has, of course, a larger arable land and a better climate in general terms, you know, is about 330, 340 million people. Although in the United States, the birth rate is marginally higher, I think almost at 2.0. And actually, in the United States, they are probably only bringing in about 1 million immigrants a year from various parts of the world. So although the United States is almost 10 times larger than Canada, Canada is bringing in over 300,000 to 350,000 people a year. So you can see that the demographics of the two countries are very different. And like every country, whether it's Canada, United States, and, you know, we hear all kinds of news today about the election of President Trump and the immigration matters in the U.S., which is really outside of our focus, except, you know, on an inferential basis. We see that immigration will continue to be in the next 20 to 40 years still very, very important and critical. And so we have to understand not everybody who just arrives in Canada can come to Canada. This is not the Canada of the late 1940s and 1950s and 1960s, like my parents who came from Northern Italy, or lots of people who came from Greece and other in England and Ireland, that they could sort of just come here and they could pretty much stay because, you know, anybody could really come, or they had a relative here and so on. That whole system has disappeared. And as is correct in every legal system, Canada can decide who should or should not come to Canada. And that's represented in our laws. All of our immigration laws really reflect that policy. And in large respect, Canada is largely non-discriminatory, really, in terms of who can or cannot come to Canada. We don't have, like in the American system, quota systems of so many people from here and there. We've probably seen more waves of people. We saw large numbers of Italians and Greeks in the 50s and 60s, and a fairly large number of Germans. Also, people don't realize that Germanic people who came to Canada after World War II was really even more than Italians. We have large Dutch communities. We have large numbers of English and Irish that in the past have come. So Canada, and today we have more and more people from countries like the Philippines and the Mideast and China and India and Pakistan who are coming here for various reasons. And so this represents the great mosaic that Canada is, and the law represents all of this. There's no quota system on anybody, but Canada chooses who comes to Canada. And so you have to understand that of the 300 to 350,000 people that come every year to Canada, and that's from outside of Canada, only about 10% are refugees. I remember a nun who's actually, I believe she's actually from Kitchener, although she might be around my age, but I never had the pleasure to meet her, Sister Mary Liddy. And I think she was with the Order of the Nuns of Notre Dame. But many years ago, I did an immigration roundtable with the former Prime Minister Paul Martin, and the Honorable Joe Volpe was the Minister of Immigration. And my former colleague from Windsor, Ontario, Les Hawke, who's passed away, and myself, and we discussed Canadian-American immigration things, and it was at the Columbus Centre here in Toronto. And I always remember what the Sister Liddy had said, which was that she says that 90% of the time is spent talking about 10% of the issue. And what she meant, and in fact, we see that in the newspapers. It's sensational. We spend, you know, 90% of the time is spent talking about the 10% factor, the refugee factor, in other words. But in fact, there's a 90% sitting out there also. And so what we have to understand in Canada, and we have to sort of challenge ourselves to realize that 10% of the people are immigrants who are refugees. But the vast majority of them are people here who are contributing economically to Canada, probably over a third of the people with their families are coming, who are people actually coming here to work and be productive. Maybe a third roughly are maybe family members like spouses and children and so on, who are coming to join people, because we have a policy of reunification. But the Canadian immigration system is largely based on economic integration to Canada. I think the it really always has been. It's just been it's been more easy, I should say, in the past to come to Canada than today. This is another myth, another urban legend, as we call it, an urban myth that people have, that, you know, today there's all kinds of people walking into Canada and there's no controls on criminality, and that any, you know, everybody and his brother come here. This is completely false and beyond the reality of what is the situation. It was much more true in the past that people could come here more easily than today. The truth today is that there are very strong controls on criminality, on people who have legitimately earned their own money to come here, and people who really are who they say they are. In other words, if I'm a computer IT specialist, I am a computer IT specialist. The qualifications, the controls, and so on and so forth are actually quite there. So the Canadian system is quite selective. And if we want to look at it and in terms of what I just discussed to you in terms of a general background, we can see what's happening overseas now, where in the Brexit situation, England has chosen to leave the European Union. And you can see some of the talk, and it'd be interesting if you listen to that talk in English language media, that England is probably considering a system very close to our own. In other words, they want to decide who comes in. We all know that the reality of the vote, which was by a bare majority, which the Conservative government in England is doing now, is basically to impose controls on who comes into England. Some people might feel that it was a vote for racism, and I won't make that polemical discussion for the moment, but there is certainly a large number of people who feel that England was turning its back on Europe, and especially in the rural areas, against large quantities of Polish people who tended to be very hardworking Catholics, I must say. I don't want to say anything bad about the English situation, but the reality is what it is. And so they're moving in another direction, as is the right of the United Kingdom to do. So, and we'll see what issues that are there. But in any event, there will no longer be a free movement of Europeans into the UK, and one can expect that their system will be not unlike our own. And in fact, a system which perhaps is really of English background, because it's actually the same kind of system that one sees in New Zealand and Australia, even in South Africa and other countries where the British Empire formerly existed and the English system of law existed, so which is the common law system as we know it. So that, by way of background, is what we've been talking about, what we've been trying to educate you about, and it's very important because it's very easy for people to talk without being knowledgeable. And it's very important to know the basis of something. We know this even in terms of religious and the Catholic faith issues. You know, I won't call him the late Pope Benedict, but he's sort of the Pope Emeritus, as we say in English. He's sort of in retirement, but he was actually a great scholar, and he wrote a book called Faith and Reason. You know, some people feel, oh, he was not so pastoral as our present Pope Francis, and perhaps that's a fair comment, but, you know, we all have different abilities and different gifts from God, and so we have to think how we communicate with people. And to his credit, he decided he was getting too old, and he decided to retire, and he's the Pope, he can do whatever he wants, and he decided that, I'm not going to be able to devote the proper care and intention to this world religion based on the teachings of Jesus Christ that is as big as the Muslim faith. And, you know, we need somebody a little bit younger, like it turned out to be Pope Francis, and he's a very pastoral pope, and he's the first Jesuit, by the way, to become a pope, and people don't realize that. And the Jesuits are actually in the intelligentsia of the church by history and tradition. But Pope Benedict has written this book called Faith and Reason. And it's very important to understand the reasons behind something. We're not talking hocus pocus stuff here. We're talking about faith and reason and discussion, communication, and thought. And that is true in a legal context, in all legal contexts, like the canon law, legal context, which we call Canadian immigration and citizenship law, which is goes back to the Canadian Constitution and the Charter of Bill of Rights. And so when we know more about the basis, it's like a building block. You build from the ground up, and the foundation has to be secure and has to be correct and has to be a number of things that people build upon to understand things. So we're at the building blocks in the English language podcast about the situation. And you say, well, you know, Martinello, why are you discussing all these things and so important? I'll tell you why. Because I said at the beginning of the broadcast that immigration and citizenship is a hot button item. It's a hot ticket item. Every day we are seeing things here in Canada. And it's been incredible the last year and a half broadcasting in Italian. The things that are happening every week that are on the front pages of the news. And so we have to understand the basis to understand this. And so what we do in our broadcasts is with the hot button items, the things that happen, we try to place them into the context of the legal world and the practical world and what's going on. So you can actually appreciate, you can have knowledge about what's happening, whether you agree with it or not is a different issue. But to have that knowledge, to understand, oh, that's why this is happening. Things do not happen in a vacuum. They happen for a reason, just like faith and reason. And so it's really important to understand that. So what I'm going to do in the second half of the broadcast, having sort of laid the base out in terms of the constitutional base and the numerical demographic base, I'm going to talk about a little bit about the categories again, and I'm going to talk about some of the hot button changes that happened during this month, which are very important, and I hope that you'll understand them in the context in which they are coming out and why they're coming out. So if you don't have it with me, you can have it with your friends and family, other discussions relating to this topic. So we're going to break for a moment. And we'll be back very shortly to continue with this dialogue. Back on the air again, and as I was mentioning, Canadian immigration, we have these broad categories. We have humanitarian compassionate areas of the law, that is our refugee stream in large part, and it's not even 10% of our total immigration stream every year, and that is humanitarian because Canada is a signatory to the International Convention on Law of Refugees, which has a very defined definition of who a refugee is, who is a person who has a well-founded fear of persecution for a variety of means, is fleeing their home jurisdiction and is not safe. So this does not mean that because I come from the United States of America and I want to come work for Radio Maria, that I can come work here because I somehow feel threatened by what's happening in the United States. It has to be an objective standard. So we see, for example, that many of the Syrian refugees that were here were actually vetted and approved with the assistance of the United Nations and sponsored by private individuals here. And the other part of the humanitarian function, really, although it's a little bit economic, is that if, for example, if I fall in love and meet a young lady from Italy and I want to try to bring her to Canada as my wife, I can bring her here. Of course, nothing's easy today in immigration law because the government would only have assumed that the only reason that this young lady would want to have married me was to come and live in Canada and work here. And that's, so they're really concerned about it being a bona fide relationship, that she won't go on welfare as soon as she comes here, and so on and so forth. So that's a certain part. But the largest parts relate to people who come here to work for legal work that is for work that is required in Canada, and to some business people. So given that context and understanding that, this week was also a hot button item. Immigration law tends to vacillate between being a more restrictive and a less restrictive regime. When I was a young lawyer 38 years ago in Canada, immigration law tended to be very pigeonholed, for want of a better word. We're talking now in 1979-81. Already then, it was quite restrictive. The numbers were much lower. They were in the 100,000 range. The country was a little bit smaller. But what they were doing was they would be pigeonholing people who had a specific niche in the economic marketplace to come to Canada. And that has changed radically from being, or I called it pigeonholing, one could say microeconomic, as opposed to macroeconomic. And then the system swung for a long time into a macroeconomic model. It didn't make a difference if I had a specific job, but, you know, if I had a master's in Latin, somehow I would end up on my feet here in Canada, especially if I spoke English. That system, too, proved to be not as ideal as they'd like. We've now moved into more of a macro model. And we have a system called Express Entry. If you're coming under the economic category as a worker, that you have to meet. And it's quite complex. And we will deal with the system of work permits going forward in separate broadcasts in English. We've done a number of them in Italian already. But it's quite a complex area of the law, even for lawyers who like our law firm that specialized in this area. But one of the announcements that happened literally this week, which is some of the changes that resulted when the new government, the Liberal government, was elected, and we're now seeing changes in the law being implemented, and they're pretty important. And some of them relate to not only the humanitarian aspect I mentioned, but also to the work visa. What is one of them that finally the government has announced that in order to enhance family unity and family reunification, the law is changed, essentially effective May the 3rd, where that if you're making an application to come to Canada, and in order to enhance family unity and reunification, you're going to be able to bring your children between the ages of 19 and 21 to Canada. Now, this is a very important, important change. It actually, for about almost 8 to 10 years, the previous government had changed the age that you could bring your children to Canada. If they were over 19, you couldn't bring them. 19 or over, you couldn't bring them. So it seems, that whereas before then, you could bring your children up to the age of 22 to Canada if you make an application. So let us say that somebody was working in Canada as an engineer, and I was here for a bunch of years, and I said, gee, I would like to stay in Canada. I've been here. If I made an application and my kids were 20 or 21, they couldn't come. So actually, it's sort of a return to the past now, and that will go into effect on May the 3rd. And that is a very, very important aspect of the economic and the humanitarian aspect combined. Unfortunately, I have a family right now who were legally in Canada and landed immigrants, and they were caught under the old law. And unfortunately, their son just turned 21. You can imagine that, 22. And because of that, even though the law is changing, he's already outside the law. So I've got a scratch in my head, and probably I'll have to bring a special humanitarian application to bring him to Canada legally with his parents who already live here and are citizens, and his brother who is already a citizen of Canada. But it's not going to be easy because the tendency of Canadian immigration law is actually not to be very humanitarian in this moment. So we're hoping that we're going to get a little bit more flexibility, because I think all of us on an objective standard would say, well, what is the use of having a family divided that already has centered their life in Canada? But unfortunately, that's not the way the law is right now, and the application of the law has been less than generous. As you may guess, I have a much more generous disposition towards immigration law, which unfortunately, or maybe some of you wouldn't agree with me, is not necessarily shared by a lot of people. The other big change that has come up, that's announced, that actually was effective as of April 27th, predated, and that is that they are getting rid of what they call the conditional visa for spouses. So on a humanitarian basis, let me just tell you what the situation is so you can understand why this change is being made. In the past, if I sponsored my spouse to come to Canada, and it's a process that generally speaking takes 12 to 18 months, it doesn't happen automatically. There's no automatic entitlement to bringing your spouse to Canada. There are a large number of controls, which we'll deal with in future segments to understand how difficult it is. So if you want to bring your spouse to Canada, once upon a time, there were no conditions on an immigration visa for a spouse. That changed about roughly 8 to 10 years ago because the government was very concerned with fraud, and that people were using people who were already established in Canada as the land immigrants or as Canadian citizens. They were using the spousal route to leave their home jurisdiction to come to Canada, only for the person who did the sponsorship here in Canada to suddenly be abandoned for no good reason by the person for whom they had spent a lot of time and money and effort. And lo and behold, there was a boyfriend or a girlfriend in the background that was the true love, and then they would try to divorce the person here. And there was a great problem because the person who sponsors the spouse in Canada, once upon a time for 10 years, now for at least 3 years, is obliged to economically support that person. So if that person went on welfare, this is what we call the worst case scenario. Mr. X sponsors his wife from Bulgaria, and she comes here, and as soon as she arrives, she dumps him for no good reason, and lo and behold, there's the secret, true love of her life in the background. And so the guy here says, oh my God, I've been duped, and I have an obligation to support this lady who's now gone on welfare, and the minister, because we have a federal jurisdiction, the powers are divided between the federal and provincial government, and the provincial government, who's responsible for administering welfare, is knocking on my door because they have a special agreement with the government of Canada, and they say, hey, listen, Mr. X, we got to pay your ex-spouse $1,200 a month, so start paying us because you agreed to sponsor her. So this situation, unfortunately, was happening quite a bit, and the government quite a few years ago said, well, you know what, not only is the person being duped and is being forced to sponsor, well, that's to pay, that's too bad, that's his problem, he should have known he was marrying, but it was actually maybe a fraudulent type of arrangement from the beginning that we couldn't catch, And therefore, we're going to put this condition on this visa that basically you got to be married for the person for at least 2 years and so on and so forth. This in turn, though, led to other problems. The problems being that somebody would sponsor somebody and they would arrive here. And then, lo and behold, they weren't interested in maintaining the matrimonial relationship because in the meantime, they had fallen in love with somebody else. And we're living with somebody else, and for whatever reason, that person found themselves abandoned, or they were a victim of spousal violence, and that they had, they basically had the Damocles sword over their heads, where they would be forced to continue in an abusive relationship. So this was a great, great problem that the government basically finally has gone back to the past and has said, we're going to eliminate the requirement for spouses and partners to cohabit with their partners for 2 years. So that has been eliminated effective April 27th. There's been a policy decision made to go back to it. So I guess the future will be, if you're going to be sponsoring a spouse, it had better be a genuine relationship. And if it's not, and you're being taken advantage of, there could be severe economic consequences for you in that regard. And you should be aware of that. So that's another change just announced. And that change was effective April the 18th. So going forward, we'll get, you know, the nitty-gritty details. But basically, as of April 18th, the requirement to cohabit with the sponsor for 2 years has been eliminated. So we've been seeing a number of cases. We're involved with a number of cases. People are frustrated on the spousal sponsorships because they think it's just a question of right to have somebody come. And nothing is a question of right here in Canada. So, and perhaps that maybe shows what kind of integrity that our system has. It's not as bad as people think. That's also an urban myth or legend. The system is actually quite protective of the people who are here and what they're doing in the situation, although this is one that's a little bit more humanitarian and objective. I also wanted to point out, before I go on to further situations, which are going to deal with some of these nuances that I mentioned, that there's even a Canadian minister of an Ontario minister of immigration and citizenship. I believe it's Laura Albanese, if I'm not mistaken. And so there, in fact, you can see that the provinces have a direct hand in many of the issues that are around. So just 2 days ago, we had some other announcements relating to immigration. And once again, I mentioned to you that we have a whole system of work permits and economic immigration that flows from that. We call it they've called it a skilled worker, independent worker. It's basically people who are here for economic reasons and would like to stay in our country, and then we decide who's going to stay or not stay. The system very generally is broadly focused on people who are working legally in jobs that we deem important on an objective basis, who usually have a decent knowledge of English and or French, and are younger. So you remember at the top of the broadcast, I mentioned to you about the demographic challenges that Canada faces, 1.7 children, and so on and so forth. And we also know objectively that the ability of somebody to speak English and French is very important in how they economically integrate into Canada. In the past couple of weeks, there have been papers, objective studies, that have discovered, lo and behold, that people who have high level of English and French, in fact, are the people that do the best in Canada, because those kinds of jobs are actually greatly sought after. You know, we all forget that 20% of Canada speaks French, as well as they speak English or maybe as a first language. And we forget that provinces like Ontario are officially bilingual, as they are in Manitoba. And I think, if I'm not mistaken, perhaps in to a certain extent, even in Saskatchewan and Alberta. And in New Brunswick, it is completely bilingual. So we tend to be a little bit too involved with our own part of the world, and we, you know, we forget that Montreal and the province of Quebec are very important aspects of Canadian life and represent very roughly 20% of the gross economic product of Canada. So all of these factors are important. And so our immigration system reflects that, even in Ontario, where they say, look, we can't force people to have children. They're having what they're having, but we need more people to grow in this model. And we want people. So we have a number of people who we want to encourage, who are younger, have good language skills, are going to be able to economically integrate into Canada. And we really don't care where they come from, although obviously where they come from, if they come from English-speaking or French-speaking countries, are very important. So on the system of skilled workers and dependent immigration, I just wanted to point out that the so-called magical number base, which we all talk about, every couple of weeks they issue a number of application invitations to come in. So the most recent ones that are coming in right now, the numbers of points that you need has been reduced. So we're getting a larger pool of people with lower overall point situations. We're going to go into the details because we're nearing the end of our broadcast. But you do have to know that, for example, the kinds of jobs that were happening are oftentimes to people, invitations to apply to come and live here permanently, are to people who are working here, like 75% of them. And we see the kinds of people percentage-wise are people like financial investment analysts, information system analysts, and so on, cooks of all people, computer programmers and interactive media developers, software engineers, food service supervisors, university professors and lecturers, graphic designers and illustrators, advertising specialists, markets, marketing and public relations people, retail sales supervisors. That's over 30%. So you can see, we're going to talk about it in more detail as we go forward, but you can see that these are actually the people who are either working here already legally, for whom we're two-thirds to three-quarters of them are established, and they actually want to come and live here, and they're already economically integrated. So this is where we're going to discuss more and more this area of work permits and sponsorship. I'm not sure in what particular order. So if there are those of you who are interested in this area of the law, we're going to hone in. I've laid the base of Canadian immigration law, and we're going to hone in on some of the specific categories and who we're looking for, who we're not looking for, and how you can access the system. It is a complex system. It's not easy, even for spouses. Very few people tend to do these applications themselves because it is just so complex. And it's oftentimes more a question not of money, but in fact of time and effort to do things right. Because if you get into document ping pong with the government of Canada, the average processing time or 12 to 18 months can expand to 2 to 3 years, which is of nobody's benefit. So in any event, we're going to close down the broadcast for today. And before we close with the broadcast, we want to take this opportunity again to inform you that we're going to be having a worldwide marathon taking place from May 23 to May 27th, 2017. The marathon is being presented to help raise funds in order to establish other Radio Maria, sorry for the Italian pronunciation, Radio Maria, but Radio Maria stations around the world, so we're able to bring the good news of Jesus through Mary to all corners of the world, to bring the Catholic voice of the world to as many people as possible. So during the week of May 23rd to May 27th, volunteers will be here at our studio, here in Toronto in particular, and they'll be available from 9 a.m. to 5 p.m. to take your pledges. In other words, are your pledges for money to help us to bring Our Lady through Jesus to the world. In other words, to expand the Radio Maria network in other places of the world. So we encourage you to be generous. Remember, this is an organization that operates solely on the pledges that we receive from all of you listeners, and we hope that the programs and the innovations that we're making to our broadcasting programming will be of a wider variety and will help you to understand in the societies in which we all belong here in Canada, but to understand the Catholic voice in Canada. We as Catholics are part of this great society. We should know about it. We should participate in it. And we encourage you to help us to help you expand the good news of Catholic radio throughout Canada. And on that note, I would like to hand the studio back to Nick, who will close off. And we hope to see you at the end of the next month, where when the marathon will be in course.
You have been listening to Ask the Lawyer, hosted by Joe Martinello. Here on Radio Maria Canada, a Catholic voice wherever you are.